Hi, I'm Abby, a functional dietitian and gut health expert.
Hi, I'm Jillian, a functional dietitian that specializes in women's health and hormones. And this is Your Body Has Your Back podcast.
Together, we have over 20 years of experience supporting clients in healing their gut and hormone symptoms and guiding them from overwhelm to ease in their body.
We help clients reconnect with their body and transform their lives using targeted nutrition, lifestyle, and supplement therapies.
Finding optimal health in our modern chaotic world is more challenging than ever. And now it's our mission to provide you with the tools you need to strengthen your relationship with your body, to resolve your gut and hormone symptoms, and become your greatest health advocate.
Join us for honest, inspiring, and offbeat conversations on health that will leave you feeling empowered to take action so that you can trust your body has your back.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to our Ask Us Anything episode, where we sourced our questions directly from you all, and we are going to answer them. So we are so excited. We've got some great ones from you all, and Jillie's going to kick us off with our first question.
So many great questions. I can't believe we haven't done one of these yet this season. I feel like we did a couple of them in season two because we had so many questions, but excited to round out season three with an Ask Us Anything. So the first question we're going to answer today is from someone that was asking for tips for clearing body acne that goes beyond the basics. It's the one thing that this individual can't shake entirely. I love this question. So, and I'm sure this is relevant for other people out there. So, I feel like we've both been asked this, you know, by clients, by friends. So, in terms of what this individual is asking, so it sounds like they are covering the basics. So, when we talk about the basics, if you're new here, this refers to everything that we covered in season one: balancing blood sugar, supporting the nervous system, supporting sleep and circadian rhythms, you know, incorporating functional foods and eating predominantly a whole foods diet, supporting detoxification and drainage. So if you feel like you are really supporting the fundamentals well, but you're still experiencing body acne, there's a couple things that come to mind here. I will sometimes see body acne related to issues with androgen hormones, but more often than not, I would say that I see body acne related to gut imbalances. So this is where it's important to remember, and this kind of speaks to honestly like every one-on-one client that enters both of our practices. If you are doing all the things, but you are still experiencing persistent symptoms, this is an SOS that there are likely deeper things going on under the hood. So we need to dive some layers deeper to understand what imbalances are really creating symptoms and driving dysfunction. So gut imbalances specifically, this is where I see a body acne often. So like back acne, chest acne, even acne, other places in the body. So when I say gut imbalances, I'm referring to gut microbial imbalances. So this could mean, you know, the overgrowth of bad dysbiotic bacteria or even pathogens in the gut that are not supposed to be there or they're not supposed to be overgrown. Something that I actually see even more than that is insufficiency dynamics or a lot of depletion with healthy beneficial gut bacteria that can drive acne in general, but definitely body acne. Another gut imbalance that can drive body acne is intestinal permeability or gut barrier issues. So for this individual, it sounds like you're doing all the things. We might need to dive a little bit deeper. I would probably say, you know, the next kind of thing to explore would be maybe doing some gut testing and getting some deeper data there to understand what's going on. And it's interesting that this question came up because I actually have just like a quick little client story that pertains to this question that I think will be helpful. So I have a client, a wonderful client that I worked with several years ago that has been doing really, really well in terms of PCOS in remission, gut hormone symptoms in remission. She recently reached out to me this year because she had to go on two rounds of antibiotics kind of towards the end of last year in the fall. And she reached out early this year because she was, you know, struggling with some ongoing digestive wonkiness, some period symptoms were popping up. And one of her biggest symptoms was body acne. So a lot of back acne in particular, again, despite doing all the things that she's been doing to really support you know, a tremendous amount of stability in her body the last several years. So we checked in, decided to run a stool test to get some updated data. And, you know, lo and behold, after the two rounds of antibiotics, her healthy commensal gut bacteria was wiped out. Everything was low. All of her key species were low. Both bacterial phyla were low. Her gut immune system was shot. So her SIGA was very, very low and suppressed. So we saw a lot of, you know, kind of repercussions of the antibiotics, which makes sense given that, you know, the antibiotics, you know, wipe out the good and the bad. But in this case, a big insufficiency dynamic and likely damage to the gut lining were driving the acne. So we've been, you know, kind of focusing on repletion, rebuilding that healthy gut ecosystem, re-strengthening that gut barrier. And we need to give things a little bit of time, but that correlated very, you know, kind of clearly with the newer symptoms that popped up and having to go on the two courses of antibiotics.
I think that picture shows up in so much of just the skin gut connection for body acne, for eczema, for any like rashes or things of, you know, I often see a lot of that like low depletion beneficials being low, the short chain fatty acids producers being low, who are producing all these like really nice anti-inflammatory, soothing. They're helping to protect also against some of these like opportunistic bullies coming in on the playground of the gut. And so we want to think about, you know, nourishing those. We actually got a good question on kind of post antibiotics too, that kind of builds on this, because this is such a big, you know, our microbiome and the vibrancy, well, the diversity and the abundance, those are like the key two terms that we want to think about with that microbiome, are so important to not only the gut, but then also, you know, what happens in the gut does not stay in the gut. And in the presence of low beneficials and impact to that gut barrier and that low immune system, we've got ourselves, you know, a recipe for disrupting, like Jillie was kind of saying from that client story, a perfect example of like disrupting the hormones, disrupting the skin, disrupting, you know, probably her like energy and brain and focus didn't feel so great too. And maybe sleep was disrupted in like minor, but her bigger symptoms were in these other areas. So we can see a lot of like the snowball effect happening in so many other areas of the body.
100%. And I'm glad that you pointed out the eczema piece and just skin issues in general, and how we often forget how interconnected everything is in the body. But, you know, in particular with the insufficiency dynamic and how that manifests often as inflammatory skin conditions and just has this, you know, snowball effect, to Abby's point. Anything else you want to add to that in terms of body acne? Or do you feel like that's kind of what you typically see with some of the stubborn body acne when everything else is in place foundationally?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely think, I feel like this one, I think kind of all over skin is like the temptation to just like bombard the body with being like, I'm going to want to clear out like any, I feel like some clients come with the belief that they're like, there must be some like parasite in my gut. There must be something that I need to like kill and get out of there. And like, just like bring in, like maybe I need an antibiotic, or maybe I need like a herbal protocol, because they've done some research like on their own. And just this, like the idea of like, actually, no, we need like deep nourishment of this, of the gut barrier. We need like TLC is what like I like to call it. Like, we're going to like TLC it up, like tender love and care on your gut. We're going to like nourish your gut bacteria. And like, yes, there might be like a bully on a playground in there that maybe we do eventually need to take care of, but we cannot take care of that bully on the playground, like an H. pylori that can be present with, you know, eczema or acne or things like that, until we do the support for the gut immune system and we start like healing up that gut barrier and we start nourishing the bacteria. Like, there's a very specific order of operations that we must do in order to really get the results that we're looking for, as opposed to just kind of like getting overexcited about the potential for a parasite being like the biggest bully of all, because that's, you know, what everyone's talking about these days, that there's so much more nuances to it. And yes, there might be an infection like wrapped up in that dynamic of that low immune system. You know, was it there to begin with, or did it come in because of the low immune system? But to just really think about, like, most often we just need more like support and more nourishment and more like gentle, like TLC is like the best way to say it. And the foundations fall into that, you know, and it, again, like in the unsexy of unsexy answers that you're going to get from us always, there's a lot of like very, once we understand exactly what's going on from testing, then it's like a yellow brick road to be able to slow and steady take us to the result that we want. And that's why testing is like the most helpful when you feel like I'm doing all the things from foundations that, you know, we've talked about. And it's kind of like, I'm still running up against these frustrating symptoms. Like, what to do next? That's where testing is the best.
Completely agree. And to just kind of build on what you're saying a little bit, Abby, without going like too far off on a tangent here, if maybe you're someone that has had gut testing done and, you know, there are, you know, parasites or pathogens or, you know, overgrowth things identified, what Abby's describing here is still incredibly relevant in that, one, oftentimes when we really bolster and support and, you know, rebuild that healthy gut ecosystem, really nourish the gut, you know, build up, you know, the immune defenses, that often can actually negate the need for, you know, more aggressive protocols in terms of antimicrobials and things like that. And that's where we always have to ask the question. And this is like a little tidbit for anyone that, you know, might be working with a functional practitioner and feels like, man, I'm just continually trying to eradicate the same things over and over, or I'm not, not seeing results. We have to ask ourselves the question, why? What set the stage for the overgrowth? What set the stage for the parasite to make a home? And that often boils down to the fundamentals of eating hygiene and appropriate digestion, nervous system support, circadian rhythms, you know, blood sugar balance, you know, fiber diversity, all those pieces. So your kind of friendly reminder not to overlook those things, but there are cases, and it sounds like this individual who had submitted the question, where they are doing all the things, and we need to kind of understand what needs more love, what really needs targeted support at this point in time.
It's funny, my like last piece on this too is in the back of my brain, I was literally having that same like thought of like, I was having a conversation with someone actually in a retail store the other day. I was like shopping and like I knew this shop owner and was kind of like overhearing their conversation talking about this like very intense protocol that she got put on by another functional dietitian. And I was like trying not to interject. And then the woman who owned it noticed me and was like, wait, this is what you do, right? I was like, yes, do you want to hear my thoughts? Like, and I was like, that's a really big protocol that you're on. And it sounds like you've been on it for a long time. And it sounds like you've gotten a little bit better, but not a lot better. And then like kind of just even bringing up like, you know, hearing a little bit more about her. She's got a crazy travel schedule. I'm like, well, what about circadian rhythm? Has anyone talked to you about this? Like, nope. And I'm like, what about like minerals and support for like the stress of the travel and all of these things? And just a lot of like low-hanging fruit that seemed to be not being addressed. And the only solution was like, we're going to keep treating it. It was candida. And I'm like, that's not a root cause most of the time. That's like an opportunist who's there because there's other holes that aren't being met. And it was like, you know, very much like eyes wide of, you know, this woman that was like, I feel like I'm being beaten down by this. I was like, because you might be. And there's so many instances, and Jillian and I talk about this all the time. I feel like the longer we practice, the less like treating of bacteria and overgrowths and parasites and things that we do, because we can see that like with all of like the eating hygiene and with the environment support and with the minerals and with the like deep nutrition and all of that, like a lot of those things just like clear on their own. And we just let the body do what the body's amazing at, because our body loves to heal. So big soapbox there, but I think
important
that is,
though.
Yeah, like very important, and only becomes more relevant the more I think like this space is filling with like excited new practitioners who learn cool stuff and relevant stuff, but like not always necessary to take it to like the biggest, baddest protocol you've ever seen in your entire life. Like, we really just need like consistency and time and like deep practice of the foundations, and then like some real specificity in there to the individual. And like sometimes we've got ourselves like the most beautiful, slow and steady kind of improvement of symptoms and on all the things we're looking for. It's way better that way for everyone.
100%.
So I feel like jumping into the question to realign. So we got a question on how to realign your gut after antibiotics. I feel like this is a nice interlude into that, because we kind of hit on some of the points. And I think anytime after antibiotics, we want to think about being kind of like gentle on the gut. Sometimes antibiotics are very disruptive to the gut environment, from like can certainly trigger like loose stools in some individuals, or just like sensitivity in the gut. And as Jillie said, you know, antibiotics aren't just killing off any opportunistic bacteria or fungal or things like that. but they also can disrupt and reduce our beneficial bacteria. So the greatest focus in a post-antibiotic kind of protocol is to like nourish your beneficial bacteria and to support your gut barrier. So that's going to create that environment where our beneficial bacteria are essentially allowed to like nourish and thrive. So I really like to start off with just emphasizing cooked foods versus raw foods. So we want to kind of make an easier time of digestion and the kind of process of the gut because it just had a little bit of a disruption to it. So cooked foods versus raw foods. If you're looking for raw foods, like smoothies or juices would be great ways to bring those in and almost like a, this is a weird way to describe it, like a pre-digested way that we've helped to kind of outsource chewing. So we want to kind of really think about that eating hygiene so that we are actually breaking down foods as effectively as possible. So when they get to the lower gut, they're actually in their like kind of most simplistic form. And we're not creating like maldigestion. We're not kind of feeding any opportunists in there. We're not creating disruption. We're not creating this. We're allowing for the gut to be this acidic environment that we want it to be and for digestion to happen kind of optimally. Feeding our kind of beneficial bacteria, we want to think about starchy plant foods. So these are where our like potatoes and our sweet potatoes and our carrots and our beets, our parsnips, squashes, the whole kind of family of like starchy whole foods in a cooked form, really nice and gentle. Thinking about soluble fiber foods. So these are going to be more of your gentle fibers, not like those insoluble, scratchy kales of the world. But these are where things like chia seeds and ground flax seeds, cooked veggies, soaked beans, those can be really helpful to feed those beneficials. Ramping up on our fermented foods. We know that fibers and fermented foods are two of the best ways to feed our beneficial bacteria. Fermented foods, so we can think of our sauerkrauts, yogurt, kimchi, about like 2 tablespoons or 2 forkfuls a day, about like 2 or 3 times a day, if that feels good to kind of bring them in. If it's, you know, start with 2 forkfuls, see how it feels. And maybe you slowly ramp up over a couple of days or a week if those are like new foods to you. This is where bringing in a probiotic can be helpful. Even taking antibiotics and bringing in a probiotic at the same time can help to certainly decrease the amount of disruptive digestive symptoms that some people can feel. You do want to separate your probiotic from your antibiotic by at least like an hour or two so that we're not killing the probiotic with the antibiotic, and then continuing to take that for a period of time after can be really helpful to just kind of support that microbiome. But we definitely want to bring in those kind of like key foods. And then really emphasizing foods that are going to help to rebuild and strengthen that gut barrier. So our gut barrier, we've got a cellular barrier, and then we've got a kind of a mucous membrane. And both of those are kind of 2 key foods. We want protein foods, and then we want foods that are rich in this mucilaginous, so this kind of slippery, supportive. Some great foods for that are bone broth. This is, you know, kind of really talked about in the gut health world for a purpose. So bone broth is great in those mucilaginous kind of gelatin like consistencies, that like jiggliness on top of bone broth. That's really helpful for that mucilaginous barrier. And then we've got some great proteins in there to help to support that cellular barrier. Gelatin, like gelatin gummies, really easy to make. And you can make them with some great like anti-inflammatory juices. So bring your cranberry juice, your tart cherry juice. Then we're getting some like kind of more nice, just cooling if there's any inflammation that got disrupted in the GI system. This also are where like our chia and our flax seeds, when you soak them in water, you get that like gelatinous kind of gooey consistency. It's a little bit of the healthy fats, but also really going to help with that kind of mucilaginous barrier. These are where we can bring in some like targeted supplement pieces too, typically like gut powders that are rich in glutamine and mucilaginous herbs can be really helpful to help to kind of more strategically build that gut barrier. We can use some functional fibers too, like acacia fiber or sun fiber are great ways to feed in a more targeted way your gut barrier. Just start nice and low and slow with those. We'd still want to bring those in addition to those kind of like food foundations. Anything that you would add to that laundry list of things?
No, that was a great, great comprehensive list. I think the one thing that jumps into my mind, which is, you know, kind of covered or, you know, in some of these other categories, but would be aloe vera juice, just another, you know, kind of functional food that I love using with clients. That's going to help to support that really beneficial mucus layer, as well as it just contains, you know, enzymes, minerals, a lot of anti-inflammatories for you know, supporting the gut lining and lowering intestinal inflammation. And that's an easy one. Typically, you know, the recommendation is anywhere from like fourth of a cup to half a cup once or twice a day on an empty stomach. So kind of away from food, going to be best absorbed and kind of interact with the gut lining that way. Typically, we recommend the outer leaf aloe vera juice has more of a laxative effect. Many people that take antibiotics often end up with some bowel movement wonkiness, some looser stools. So just making sure you're choosing the inner leaf aloe vera juice form. And that can be really, really supportive as well.
You know, we are serious about high quality supplements, and that includes probiotics. That's why we trust in BioCult every day, an expert-developed, research-backed probiotic supplement that contains 14 probiotic strains to support the diversity and abundance of the microbiome for overall health every day. Probiotics are especially a great everyday tool during cold and flu season, as our gut houses about 80% of our immune system. So what nourishes the gut nourishes our immune system. Make sure to use code YBH, YB20, to enjoy 20% off the BioCult Everyday Probiotic. I love aloe vera. The George's aloe is my like personal favorite. It also has like no flavor and no texture, which is nice. Sometimes the flavor of some of those aloe veras are like real rough to get down. Whereas George's aloe is like, you can mix it with water and it doesn't taste any different, but it's going to get you all that like nice anti-inflammatory, supportive the mucous membrane, all that like good stuff that Jillie was talking about. Also helpful strategy for heartburn too. Different conversation, but nice little plug for aloe.
So our next question is DIM okay to take while pregnant to help metabolize estrogen? So interestingly, I have now received this exact question. This is the third time I've gotten this question recently. So for the person that submitted this, we are curious, is this coming from, you know, just sort of your own curiosity? Did you read something, see something online? Just very interesting. I had, you know, someone DM me this question, and then I had someone submit it to the monthly Q&A in our PCOS group program. So just curious if there's like something out there that's stimulating interest in DIM in pregnancy. But to talk a little bit about, you know, our thoughts on DIM in pregnancy, I do want to give a little bit of background in terms of just what DIM is, why it might be used, so that this answer actually makes sense. But DIM, or which stands for diindole methane, is a popular ingredient that is added to supplements that helps to support estrogen detoxification. DIM is something that I think both Abby and I have used in appropriate cases in practice for years, but I have noticed it pop up in supplements, like hormone balancing supplements, acne supplements, more recently. I feel like I've just been asked about it more and more in general.
It seems to be everywhere now.
Yes, yes. And some very popular like acne supplements, I think, have stimulated that, which is just very, very interesting. But to give you a little bit of background information on DIM, what it is, why people are using it. So DIM comes from the cruciferous vegetable family, and it is very, very specific for supporting phase one detoxification in the liver. The estrogens that we produce in the body have to go through a multi-step detoxification process. And the purpose of this process is to break down estrogens into byproducts or metabolites that are neutral or water soluble, which is going to make it easier for your body to eliminate them safely. So the estrogens we produce in the body has to break these down and eliminate them from the body safely. In terms of detoxification as a whole, if you want to do a deep dive on detoxification, tune into season one to check out episode 4 of the podcast. We cover detoxification and drainage extensively and talk about a lot of this in a lot of depth, even, you know, outside of estrogen and hormones. So definitely check that out. But in order for me to answer this question fully, I do want to give you just like a little bit of a background here in terms of what's happening with estrogen detox. So we have like three phases of general detoxification. Phase one and phase two detoxification take place in the liver. And phase three detoxification is essentially going to be the elimination phase, where we're eliminating toxins and waste products from the body, predominantly via stool. With phase one estrogen detox, your estrogens are going through something called hydroxylation, which means enzymes are going to direct your estrogens. When I say estrogens, remember, we don't have one type. We have multiple types of estrogens. So the estrogens that we produce, different enzymes are going to direct these estrogens down three different pathways in the liver that lead to the formation of three different estrogen metabolites or byproducts. Not all of these metabolites and not all of these pathways are considered good or healthy. Some pathways and some metabolites are going to be more preferred and safer, while other metabolites and pathways have the potential to be more harmful or to be more problematic. So these metabolites then enter phase two detoxification in the liver, known as methylation or conjugation. This is where the metabolites that I just mentioned from phase one are essentially going to get neutralized and packaged up so we can eliminate them safely via stool. And then phase three, estrogen detox, is where we're going to, you know, eliminate these estrogen waste products that got all packaged up and, you know, broken down and packaged up nicely, you know, via bowel movements. So to get back to DIM specifically and what it does, DIM is essentially going to upregulate specific enzymes that influence phase one estrogen metabolism. So DIM is going to direct estrogen down the healthier, more preferred pathway and away from some of those pathways that I mentioned that can be more problematic or are associated with more estrogenic symptoms, unpleasant symptoms. That sounds pretty great, right? We can take a supplement. We're going to, you know, promote healthy estrogen metabolism. But what people are often overlooking here is that in order for detoxification to happen properly and safely, and before introducing any supplements, anything really that has the ability to like upregulate or alter how these detoxification pathways are working, we need to make sure that every phase one, phase two, phase three of detoxification, all of these things have to be functioning and operating really well. And this is where we like to think about Dr. Carrie Jones and the estrogen detox analogy that she is famous for giving. So what I want you to do is think about estrogen detox like a clawfoot bathtub. Phase one is going to represent water filling up the tub. Is the right water filling up the tub? How fast or how slow is, you know, water filling up in the tub? That's phase one. Phase two represents the drain in the tub. So is the drain open? Is the drain closed? Is the drain clogged? Phase three represents the sewer line and, you know, the sewer line out of, you know, where the water goes through the drain, enters the sewer, and I don't know where it goes from there.
But, into the toilet.
Yeah. Is the sewer line, you know, functioning properly, or is there an issue? Is there some type of dysfunction here? If you start supplementing with DIM, you are essentially cranking up the faucet on the bathtub. You are increasing, you know, the amount of water going into that bathtub. If the drain in the bathtub is clogged or there's dysfunction in the sewer line, the bathtub is going to overflow. And that is clearly not a good thing, right? So supplementing with DIM without making sure that phase two and phase three are working properly has the potential to actually do much more harm than good and to create more symptoms for people. So if we have that a massive clog in the drain, we're sluggish methylators, you know, poor phase two detox, we start taking DIM, you know, we could start to experience a lot of unpleasant estrogenic symptoms. That could be, you know, more breast pain and tenderness, heavier periods, you know, more skin issues, mood-related issues. It could contribute to all sorts of kind of, you know, high estrogen symptoms related to the fact that we're like creating a bigger backlog and more overflow with the bathtub. So we love you using DIM. Again, I'm like probably scaring you now here, but we love using DIM in the right cases. In the right cases, when you've supported, you know, you really want to work backwards with detoxification. So when you've supported phase three, you've supported phase two, these things are working optimally. In the right right appropriate case, DIM can be fabulous alongside nutrition and lifestyle strategies for really moving the needle with these internal dynamics driving symptoms for women. And we do use it, you know, frequently, but we would never, ever, ever supplement with DIM without having deep hormone data via Dutch testing to confirm that it was appropriate. Dutch testing, we've mentioned before, it's, you know, our preferred method of hormone testing in both of our practices because it actually gives us the ability to assess not only hormone production, but hormone metabolism, you know, and to look at various types of estrogen and how they're kind of moving through the detoxification process. So really, we would never use DIM outside of that. And, you know, because DIM also has the ability to alter overall estrogen levels and estrogen metabolism, so another case where we would not use DIM, if someone has low estrogen levels or maybe even, you know, low normal, DIM really, it has the ability to lower total circulating estrogen. So, you know, that again could create more problems for someone if they're actually not producing enough estrogen. So because of the fact that DIM has the ability to alter total estrogen levels, it also has the ability to significantly alter estrogen metabolism. You know, I would definitely not recommend using it in pregnancy, and outside of that would not recommend using it blindly without, you know, the guidance of a practitioner that's, you know, has data to, you know, kind of make that recommendation specifically. Will I say, so, you know, ultimately, I really can't think of a reason that I would feel comfortable and confident using DIM with a client that was pregnant. If a client that was pregnant had some significant estrogen clearance issues, I would probably double down on the strategies for supporting healthier estrogen metabolism that I felt confident were absolutely safe in pregnancy. So like using a lot of therapeutic food interventions. There's so many ways that we can move the needle with phase one, phase two, phase three via nutrition and lifestyle. So that would be my emphasis. You know, certainly if someone has another opinion out there and there's cases where they feel it's warranted, like I'm open to a discussion, but I've never used it in pregnancy with a client and I don't feel it would be appropriate or warranted.
And I think this is another just big example of that, like there is an order of operations that has to be followed in order to like get the results that we're looking for. And in this like endless era of information that, you know, all people are getting access to who aren't, you know, providers who have spent like 10, 15 years like studying, you know, all of these pieces. And it's like, oh my gosh, DIM, this sounds so great. Like it sounds like it's literally the solution to like all of my prayers because like I sound like I have estrogen issues. Let me put myself on this to take care of my skin or my breast tenderness or my, you know, estrogen dominance that I just read about from an article. And like these are pretty powerful supplements and they can make a lot more disruption than, you know, good when taken out of order, when taken, you know, for the wrong situation. And this is again where we come back to like testing to be like the ultimate way for us to use these like pretty high powered supplements. It's like food is kind of our first intervention. And that's where we talk on the podcast so much about because it's like everyone can use that. Very comfy, very safe, very effective too when, you know, wielded in like those therapeutic levels and everything that we've talked about, especially in those functional food episodes in our kind of season one, like definitely tune back for those. But when it comes to supplements, like we want to know what we're doing, why we're doing it, and when we need to do it. Because in those cases too, like if someone's, you know, in pregnancy and they're just like really constipated and then they start to struggle with maybe like more estrogen, you know, dominant symptoms, it's like, oh, well, we got to get you going to the bathroom because maybe that's where things are coming from because you're not actually taking the trash all the way out into the toilet. And it's kind of like, oh, maybe if we get that phase three of detox moving, then everything else is going to start to like clear out. And we're, you know, looking at a whole different thing. But it's like to Jilly's point, if you start filling up the bathtub from the top and that poor person's still constipated, you're going to create a whole host of issues that probably didn't even exist in the first place when we're just like now taking these very therapeutic supplements that are kind of like kinking up the processes. So, you know, there is a very specific order of operations that that we always want to abide by.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's hard as a consumer. I just want to empathize with that because there are so many supplements out there and a lot of information and misinformation. Again, a lot of popular like acne contain, you know, acne targeted hormone balancing supplements we've seen that contain DIM. And it's, you know, again, it's for the right individual, these things can be great, but for the wrong individual can definitely do more harm than good. So always just want to make sure you really understand what you're taking. If you are not familiar with something, ask your provider, you know, really just make sure you feel like confident in what you're taking and why, and that it's actually appropriate for you.
All right. So we got a question on how can someone prevent a recurrence of candida? So candida is an opportunistic kind of fungal overgrowth in the body. Now, what we want to remember is candida is pretty much always present in every person's body. And when it's overgrown, we then want to think about, you know, what is actually allowing for this overgrowth to occur? Because both Jillian and I feel very confident with saying like candida on its own is not a root cause. So we can certainly experience overgrowth of candida and, you know, then experience symptoms that like fungal burden symptoms that kind of come along with that. But there is a deeper reason for why that overgrowth is happening. And that's what we want to be kind of supporting to clear the candida overgrowth. And that's something that the body will help to naturally do when we kind of, again, put the right pieces in the right order at the right time and all that good stuff. But that's the same kind of fundamentals that we want to be practicing if we've experienced candida overgrowth and we want to kind of help to prevent it. So when, you know, definitely when someone kind of comes into our practice and they're like, oh yeah, well, I worked with someone because I had like massive candida overgrowth and we just like killed all the fungus. It's kind of like, oh, there were some big foundations that we probably didn't have in place. And that's what we want to be focusing on. So when we think about kind of preventing recurrence, we want to be thinking about the steps for optimal digestion. We want to be thinking about the steps for really helping to nourish a healthy microbiome. So our balance and that kind of robust microbiome is typically what helps to strengthen the immune system, to strengthen the gut, to keep any overgrowth of these opportunistic fungal kind of at bay. I always like to say like the saying, like when the cat's away, the mice will play. Like that's what candida, that's how candida kind of thrives in the body. It's like, ooh, like the immune system's weakened or the beneficial bacteria aren't there. Like it's my time, I'm going to come out. And then that's where we get like a toe fungus when there's someone who has like an autoimmune dynamic or, you know, because there's the distractions and overwhelms like in the body. And we want to be thinking about a nice, like strong immune system from those key immune nutrients. And all of that are really deep practices through like consistent foundations. So starting with eating hygiene. So we want to think about, you know, really preventing maldigestion in the gut. So starting with chewing your foods, that is our, you know, number one only way to break down physical foods into the smaller building blocks as they go lower down in the gut. And if we miss that step, what we lead to is larger undigested food particles going down lower into the gut, causing kind of immune challenges, causing maldigestion, feeding some of these opportunists and creating disruption to the pH of the gut. We can also experience, you know, we want to kind of eat in a like non-distracted environment so that we're allowing the brain to really kick off that digestive process. So that can look like 3 deep breaths before meals. That can look like turning off computers and phones and kind of visual distractions, sitting down so that we're not physically moving around, looking at our food, smelling our food, cooking our food as part of that process. So we're starting to get the actual digestive secretions, our saliva, our stomach acid, our bile, our digestive enzymes. All of those are key parts of not only what helped to break down the physical structures of food so that we get them into those smaller building blocks, but they also create the acidity in the lower GI system that's going to prevent the kind of growth of fungal, which typically are growing at a kind of more basic pH. So the gut actually really thrives in an acidic environment. I know all the acid people out there, we want an acidic gut, starting with a very acidic stomach. So all of that is really kind of like how we eat. And that's why something that we stress often in terms of the environment of the gut, the eating hygiene. So thinking too of keeping blood sugar stable. So many of those foundations that we talked in kind of episode one about blood sugar, so that we're really keeping kind of the inflammation stress roller coaster at bay. So we're not creating elevated blood sugars that then can, you know, disrupt lots of different dynamics in the body, including microbiome dynamics, and kind of fungal does feed off of more elevations in kind of carbohydrates, simple carbohydrates, sugars, and things like that. But it's not about starving those microbes. It's more about keeping that kind of consistency and balance and working with the body through those foundations. But blood sugar is definitely something we want to be thinking about. Feeding the gut microbiome, as we talked about in the kind of antibiotics question. So all of those kind of soluble fiber foods, those starchy carbohydrates, we want to nourish those beneficials. I won't go back through that list again. Thinking about kind of key immune nutrients too. Part of that is, are we actually digesting and absorbing those key? A lot of those are fat soluble nutrients. So we're thinking about our kind of detoxification pathways and our bile production. And are those kind of working? So bitter foods can help to kind of move those pathways, get kind of bile flowing and help us to actually digest and absorb those fat soluble nutrients. And are those fat soluble nutrients actually present in our diet? So we want to be kind of emphasizing those fat soluble nutrients are vitamins A, D, E, and K. We can get them through kind of animal products. Certainly beef liver is a great source of those. We can even take that in a supplemental form if we're not down for the eating of the liver. Cold water fatty fish, pasture-raised dairy products, whole eggs. We're going to be getting a lot of those kind of more immune nutrient-rich foods. Also, I think a lot about kind of mineral support too, to keep the any kind of stress dynamics that can be kind of driving of this low immune system. So those are emphasizing our kind of potassium, our sodium, our magnesium. We can get those through key foods. So mineral-rich foods, a lot of those mineral-rich foods are a lot of the kind of animal proteins are going to be mineral-rich. Dairy products are mineral-rich. Things like our cold water fish, things like shrimp and oysters. We'll come back to our starchy carbs there too. So our starchy plants are great potassium sources. Lots of fruits and vegetables are great potassium sources. So really emphasizing those as key foods. We like to use some of mineral beverages too. So adrenal cocktails that are kind of the partnering of potassium and sodium, typically with a vitamin C source in there, can be a great way to get some extra boost in there. So all of those are really helping to support the very foundations of kind of our optimal digestion and the creating of those digestive secretions, beneficial bacteria, and kind of our key immune nutrients and the way the digestive system helps us to actually digest and absorb those key immune nutrients. So it really comes back to those kind of big rock foundations, but those are some of the more like detailed reasons for why we would be emphasizing those.
When it comes to supporting gut health and hormones, balancing blood sugar is step number one. The foundations for supporting blood sugar balance that we discuss extensively on the podcast are an amazing place to start. But everyone is unique and really responds differently to nutrition and lifestyle changes. To get a clear sense of what's going on with your blood sugar and for understanding your unique response to nutrition and lifestyle strategies, we really love using Veri's Continuous Glucose Monitor. Veri pairs a CGM with an easy-to-use app that gives you the ability to understand how your nutrition and lifestyle habits are impacting your blood sugar. These insights can help you improve your digestion, hormone health, and metabolic health in a much more targeted way. If you're interested in testing out Veri's CGM and app to guide you with establishing supportive habits that improve your health, you can use code VSM-YBHYB or use the link in the show notes to enjoy $30 off your order.
Anything you would add to that?
No, I think that was a great list. And yeah, ultimately, I think it's, you know, again, kind of determining the why here, determining, you know, why are we experiencing overgrowth? You know, candida is a pathobiont. It is not normally problematic in a healthy gut environment. So what's going on in the gut environment? And I think you hit on like all the really big ones. Did you mention, you know, kind of stress outlets in general? That was the one thing I would maybe add just in terms of nervous system support, which I think is an ongoing, you know, challenge for most of us, or an ongoing practice to kind of continue working on. Ultimately, you know, if we're operating in a state of chronic fight or flight, that's going to be suppressive to the immune system in a big way. And Abby touched on kind of the importance of, healthy, robust immune function in relation to, you know, candida. also in terms of, you know, supporting gut acidity, you know, definitely if we're operating in a state of chronic fight or flight, that's going to impact, you know, digestion in a variety of ways in terms of, you know, blood flow, but it's definitely going to suppress digestive secretions like stomach acid. So, you know, no one's perfect here, but, you know, definitely just something to always have on the radar as another foundation. The one other thing that kind of came to mind for me was estrogen and just like the relationship between candida and estrogen. And, you know, how they can really, you know, encourage, you know, high estrogen can, you know, drive elevations with candida and vice versa. This can be relevant for women on estrogen containing birth control pills, as well as for women that have some actual true issues with estrogen and, you know, maybe excess estrogen production or issues with estrogen, you know, detoxification. And, you know, that's kind of a whole nother topic to get into, but something like outward you could consider in terms of something overtly maybe contributing to excess estrogen would be like your endocrine disruptors in terms of, you know, plastics and toxins and chemicals in the environment, you know, if there's a high estrogen load, possibly, you know, driving some issues with candida as well, or amplifying issues rather.
Yeah. And I think actually on that point, even to touch on like someone that's experiencing like more like chronic recurrence of candida and things like that, thinking of like, is there a like fungal exposure from an environment that is kind of persistent in, so this would be like mold from an environment. So it's kind of like you're doing all these things that you're saying, you're like, no, I'm doing that too. Like these are all things I'm you know, focused on or aware of. So practicing the foundations, yet finding yourself in these dynamics, kind of repetitively thinking of like these, the deeper pieces. So yeah, that kind of estrogen piece. Am I living in, you know, a water damaged home? Is there some mold exposure in where I'm living or working or spending time that might be kind of exposing me to kind of being colonized by some of these kind of fungal candida like species and triggering, you know, some of more of these like fungal like symptoms. So that's where, you know, typically once we start to practice the foundations and we find we're kind of hitting our heads against like a glass ceiling of I can't get over these symptoms or I can only get so far, then this is again where we start to go a little bit deeper and we would want to look to, you know, maybe deeper hormone testing, deeper fungal testing, deeper gut testing to say like, is there some of this going on? And then we can hope to get to kind of the root of that because we ideally shouldn't be kind of experiencing chronic recurrence of candida just because you're like, you're prone to candida. It's like, no, there's something going on that can be, you know, unearthed and we can kind of get you out of this chronic recurrence. And that goes for anything like chronic recurrence of SIBO, chronic recurrence of candida, chronic recurrence of like any type of symptom. It's really under like helping to get support to work with someone to say like, what's the driving piece for you uniquely? And that investment is so worth it because then it gets you out of this, the knowledge in your own body and the knowledge of how to support yourself kind of gets you out of that consistent dynamic and some of the fear that can come along with that of like, I never know if I'm doing the right thing. Cause then we, you know, we get to understand and educate you on your unique body.
All right, we have time for a couple more questions here. Next up, someone asked, can acid reflux be linked to your menstrual cycle? This individual says, I swear I get it the same few days every month. I love, love, love that you are paying attention to this. And this is definitely not, you know, something that you are making up or something that's all in your head. The premise of this podcast, we must point out, is based on gut and hormones together, the gut hormone connection. You cannot look at the gut without looking at the hormones and vice versa. And this is kind of like a side note for anyone. If you experience, particularly for women, I will say, if you experience digestive symptoms, pay attention to the patterns, not just day to day, but throughout the entire cycle. This is one of the most important things that we are doing in an initial assessment and on an ongoing basis with our clients. And it is amazing how many gut symptoms are often tied to the menstrual cycle in terms of big flares or amplification with, you know, digestive symptoms at certain parts in the cycle. And that can just give us so much information about what might be going on internally. So this is just a great thing that you picked up on. And in terms of what, you know, is likely happening here specifically, and there there are some other things that could be going on, I will mention, but the most sort of like overt, obvious, you know, thing going on here is, you know, kind of what's happening with estrogen and progesterone. I would imagine, and feel free to let us know if, you know, I'm off here, but I would imagine you're probably experiencing the acid reflux sometime in your luteal phase. So sometime during that time period after ovulation and before you get your period. Oftentimes women are more symptomatic during this time in their cycle based on what is going on hormonally. There's more inflammation in the body, higher hormone burden, you know, bigger burden on, you know, detoxification, you know, we're more immunosuppressed. But in general, in the luteal phase, this is where we're producing large amounts of the hormone progesterone, which is going to relax smooth muscle, including relaxing the lower esophageal sphincter, which can be a driver of, you know, GERD and acid reflux. Increases in estrogen also increase nitric oxide synthesis, which induces smooth muscle relaxation throughout the digestive tract, but specifically in the esophagus and, you know, with the lower esophageal sphincter as well. So in the luteal phase, there are points where both estrogen and progesterone are really ramped up. So I wouldn't be surprised if we were experiencing, you know, GERD or acid reflux at this time. Again, let us know if you're experiencing it at a different time in your cycle, and I would love to troubleshoot that. There's like nothing that brings me more joy than troubleshooting like cyclical symptoms and figuring out what's going on hormonally. But this also speaks to kind of what a lot of women experience in pregnancy with overall hormone production with both estrogen and progesterone, like really ramping up and being super high and the relaxation of the smooth muscle and the lower esophageal sphincter.
Yeah, I've definitely had clients with that like cyclical kind of experience of heartburn. And there is another side to it. All right, so our last question here, how to support adrenals through nutrition. So we want to be thinking about really consistency in our supportive practices. And those are supportive certainly through nutrition, but certainly through the way that we are supporting our body. So we want to think about kind of our lifestyle as a big part of that too. So not only just what we're eating, but you know how we're eating it and how we're kind of moving through our day, because that's going to have a lot to do with the, as we're, you know, support, not only aiming to maintain healthy adrenals, but if you're working from a burnout or like a low adrenal output, low cortisol production, something maybe you have more just a feeling of from a symptom experience, or you have some more data from maybe like a Dutch test where you have actually cortisol information. We want to really be thinking about like that kind of gentleness practices on the body and consistency in those. So first, big picture, like consistent meal timing. So we want to be kind of feeding the body around the same time every day, avoiding like long spans of time. So about every 3 to 4 hours, we want to be kind of refueling with a robust meal. So we actually have satiety for 3 to 4 hours. We're not just like eating and then being like hungry for 3 to 4 hours and then being like, okay, I guess it's time to eat again. So those consistent meal timings, really eating within an hour or two of waking. We want to ensure that we're eating enough too. And that's not only enough calories, enough protein, but enough carbohydrates also. So that's where, you know, sometimes doing some like food tracking, not to see that like you're, you know, really just to avoid under eating is kind of the practice of that. Maybe just a couple of days, really don't need more than like 5 days to just kind of get a gauge of like, where are you? Where do you want to be? Helping to move through, making sure that you're kind of getting in the optimal amounts of foods so that we're not creating stress in the body from an under-eating perspective, because then we're going to see our stress organs certainly experiencing stress as a result of that. Emphasizing mineral-rich foods. So we want to be supporting the minerals that are helping the kind of our adrenal organs and our stress organs and our kind of stress dynamic in the body and the nervous system to kind of function more optimally. So again, that's potassium, sodium, magnesium are going to kind of be the three biggies, I would say. So mineral-rich foods, where again, we kind of went over that list, but we're thinking, you know, animal protein foods, we're thinking kind of foods from the ocean. So we're going to get more shrimps and oysters and cold water fish. We want to be thinking about starchy carbs. We can do mineral beverages too, like those adrenal cocktails, emphasizing vitamin C-rich foods. So this could be our citrus category. Even things like cauliflower and bell peppers are high in vitamin C. So some surprising foods that maybe we don't commonly, you know, hear about as vitamin C rich foods, really making sure that we're having consistent sleep and wake cycles. are going to be helpful because our kind of master hormones, that cortisol, is really helps to kind of govern our circadian rhythm in the body. And so when we go to sleep and when we wake, and light exposure are really key areas of communication to the body to help to strengthen the patterns of our kind of cortisol throughout the day, that diurnal pattern. So consistent sleep and wake cycles as much as we can, and then really optimizing kind of morning light and protection from light at night so that we can kind of optimize our like melatonin. So really a lot of those practices, bringing in some nervous system support. We've got a lot of these foundations that we're kind of touching on. I know I'm running through this list like pretty quick here, are through our like season one. Those are, you know, re-listening to those, really kind of even writing down like what are the ones that you're really kind of prioritizing? What are some areas that are like, oh, okay, wait, actually I haven't been, you know, emphasizing these particular foods or these particular practices, and just kind of looking as like a bird's eye view, you know, where are maybe some holes in my practices? I find personally, and with a lot of clients, that building in like productive rest moments throughout the day, be it 3 to 5 minutes of like deep breathing or meditation, or if you've got a 15 to 30 minute window where you can actually like create stillness, maybe lie down, do an actual like kind of like yoga nidra, which is kind of a guided meditation that helps to actually be a little bit more restorative than like a nap. Those can be really helpful to just kind of allow your nervous system to take like a nice, like big breath during the day, and instead of living in this kind of go, go, go. So really practicing some of those purposeful rest moments. I like to call them productive rest moments.
So I think you covered all the big things from a nutrition perspective with supporting the like adrenals and lowering stress. I think my big rocks would be consistent eating. You know, number one way, eating enough, eating consistently, truly the number one way to reduce stress on the body. A lot of other strategies aren't going to do much if we're under eating or, you know, eating and meal frequency is erratic. So I think if you're in like a real stressful period of time and you're like, oh my gosh, you know, the adrenals are taxed, even just like starting there can produce a lot of safety in the body. And then, you know, love all of the other, you know, recommendations and ideas that you mentioned as well.
Yeah, I think this is definitely a topic that is talked about a lot on like social media now. And there's a lot of like, here's the herbs that'll do it. Here's the adaptogens that'll help to do it. Here's like all of these pieces that can be really supportive, but they are not going to actually carry you to, you know, really helping to get from a low cortisol place to an optimal cortisol place or wherever your adrenals are without these big rock foundations. And that is, you know, we can't out supplement a lack of kind of the lifestyle and nutrition pieces, particularly for the adrenals. And the adrenals are, you know, powerful enough to kind of throw everything off in the body. So those are very much, to you know, Jillie's point, kind of what we're talking about of like, those are the things that we want to be focusing on. And that's kind of, you know, the big picture of everything. Supplements are, when they're wielded well, they can be really helpful, but they're not going to take us to the finish line if we're not doing the big rock foundation. So we hope that's what you garnered from our Ask Us Anything. That's always our point. We hoped that these were helpful kind of nuggets of wisdom, some soapboxes that we stood on, but you know, always for a purpose. And really just to remind all of you that like the foundations are so powerful and we're just trying to slowly but surely make them sexy again.
slowly but surely. And that's officially a wrap on season 3. We hope this was helpful. Like Abby mentioned, definitely, you know, follow up with thoughts, additional questions on Instagram. We always love to hear from you guys. We will be taking a little break, a little bit of a breather, and doing some, you know, deep planning for the next season. So definitely would love to stay in touch, hear how you guys are doing, what questions are coming up, and we will see you in season 4.
Thank you for listening to the Your Body Has Your Back podcast. If you enjoyed today's podcast episode, please take a minute to leave us a 5-star review and make sure to share the podcast with a friend or family member that you think might benefit from listening.
Make sure to follow the Your Body Has Your Back Instagram and to share your favorite episodes. And definitely tag us as you start to live out the Your Body Has Your Back lifestyle. We can't wait to see it. If you're looking for more support on your gut and hormone healing journey, connect with Abby and I over on Instagram. You can follow Abby at Above Health, and you can follow me, Jillian, at Jillian Greaves RD. Thank you and see you in the next episode.